thought occurring to me. Morgan's just not used to sharing me with anyone, I guess. I think it's hard for her that I'm spending so much time with you. I'll make sure I spend some quality time with her tomorrow so she doesn't feel so neglected. Girls, Charlie says, rolling his eyes. Although, I guess they're not all bad. There are a couple decent ones. Charlie stands, brushes the sand off himself, and offers me a hand up. I wish we could just, like, sleep out here. It'd be pretty cool to wake up with you in my arms instead of my ratty old teddy bear. I love the idea of waking up next to Charlie. I love the image of Charlie hugging his childhood stuffed animal almost as much. Someday, before you go do whatever it is you decide to do in the fall, we'll have to make that happen, I tell him. Deal, he says. Time to get you home. And then tomorrow, I'm gonna take you on a real date, okay? I nod and drop the bomb on him. That's perfect, 'cause you need to meet my dad. Chapter 14. Charlie drops me off, I walk through the door, and Dad's right there to greet me. His hair is standing straight up like he's been running nervous fingers through it all night. His eyes are hollow and haggard. He throws his arms around me and hugs me so tightly I can't breathe. Sorry I'm late, I say into his shoulder. He pulls back and gives me a long, hard look. Don't you ever scare me like that again, Katie. I thought you were dead. I have no idea who this boy is or what he thinks he's doing keeping you out until all hours of the night. This wasn't Charlie's fault. Breaking curfew is all on me. If you were any later, you could have gotten UV exposure, Dad says, getting angry now that he can see I'm alive and well. You should know better than anyone what that kind of trigger can lead to. He's so worked up now, he's practically spitting the words out. Dad, chill, I say. Look at me. I'm fine. No harm, no foul. Only because you were lucky this time, he says. I heave a huge sigh. I truly can't take being coddled one second longer. Dad, listen to me. I'm not a child. I can take care of myself. I can make my own decisions. I'm sorry that tonight I chose to stay out a little later than you were comfortable with, but I'm fine. My voice rises with my frustration level. No, I'm more than fine. I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life. Can't you see that? He shakes his head sadly. All I can see is my little girl ready to throw away everything we've worked so hard for on a boy who doesn't respect our house rules. Will you stop judging Charlie? You don't even know him, I yell. He's the best, most kind, and most respectful boy I've ever met. The only person you have a problem with here is me, your own daughter. If you hadn't noticed, I've grown up, Dad. I'm not a little girl who can be satisfied with you blowing up photos you took on safari and creating a fake African savanna for me in the basement anymore. I need to get out and really live. My dad looks ready to cry. I'm so aggravated now. I might too. I can't believe my night turned on a dime like this. From perfect to total disaster in a matter of minutes. I knew this might happen once you got to a certain age, my dad says, almost to himself. You're so strong-willed. I guess it's inevitable that would work against me. I step forward, put my arms around his neck, and rest my head on his shoulder. Dad, I'm fine. I promise. In fact, I'm more than fine. I'm great. Maybe for the first time since I got diagnosed. Please, just let me be normal. Please, you have to trust me. He relaxes into the hug.
I just want you to be safe, Peanut, he says. You're my girl. I can't bear to think of anything bad happening to you.
I know, I tell him. I love you. I promise to text next time I'm going to be late. And I promise you're going to love Charlie when you meet him. He's coming to pick me up tomorrow. Well, tonight, I guess. And he can't wait to meet you. So I might be exaggerating a little. He's a good guy, Dad. He reminds me of you.
I hope you're right, he says. I hope he takes the news about your XP like the respectful, mature young man you say he is. I hope he doesn't run away because he can't handle it.
I hate that my dad thinks Charlie might ditch me when he finds out about my disease. So much so that I tell him the biggest lie of my life. It's a whopper. He already knows, I say, and it doesn't change the way he feels about me in the least bit. Dad's wrinkles relax. He truly seems happy for me.
That's great,
he tells me.
Really, it's everything I've ever wished for you.
I feel bad about making up Charlie's reaction, but not bad enough to take back what I've said. I'm fairly certain it will become the truth once I finally get up the guts to actually tell him anyhow. I text Morgan once I'm back in my room. I'm home, safe and sound, she texts back. Dot, dot, dot. Don't be mad, my dad isn't. Three bubbles appear, then disappear. There they are again. There they go. Finally, a text comes through. Another ellipsis. I don't think I can remember Morgan ever getting mad at me before. I know you're used to being my only contact to the outside world, but at least try to be happy for me, please. More bubbles popping up and then leaving. Then this. Are you kidding me? I am not jealous of your stupid boyfriend. Good for you. All I am trying to do is make sure you're alive to actually enjoy your relationship with Charlie. Sorry for caring. Doth the lady protest too much? Methinks yes, I type. I'm not actually going to send it, but then I hit send by mistake, and it goes flying out into the world. Morgan's reply comes quickly. Get over yourself. And don't come crying to me when he turns out to be an ass about your XP. Not everyone is as cool as me about stuff like that. Ugh. First my dad, and now Morgan, assuming that Charlie will leave me when he finds out. I recreate my lie and decide it only counts as one, since it's the same thing I told my dad. Charlie is. He knows, and he's completely cool. Good for him, good for you. I'm turning off my phone and going to sleep now. I was up all night. Later. Who knew relationships could be so complicated? I toss and turn in bed, worrying about how to convince my dad to give me more freedom. How to actually tell Charlie what I supposedly already told him. What to do about Morgan. I'm mad at her, but maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe I should apologize to her, not the other way around. Eventually, I fall into a fitful sleep. Chapter 15.
So, tonight's the night, my dad says.
Yep, I say, gnawing on a nail. I know I shouldn't be this nervous. How could my dad not like Charlie? He's like perfect. Not to mention a perfect gentleman. Still, there's a lot riding on what my dad thinks of him. I need everything to go just right. But you're gonna be normal, right? I've managed to convince my dad not to lecture Charlie about XP and how dangerous it was for me to be out so late last night. I've told him that normal dads don't talk about their daughter's medical conditions when they meet the boyfriend. This one lie sure is snowballing, and it does not feel good. My life as a rebellious teen is really stressing me out. The doorbell rings. I let Dad answer it alone. The plan is that I'm supposed to go to my room and wait until he calls for me, but I can't stand the suspense of not knowing how it's going. I walk halfway up the stairs and stay put. I hear Charlie introducing himself, my father ushering him into the den, then telling him to sit.
Ever been arrested?
This is my dad's idea of an opening line? I can't even.
No, sir, Charlie replies.
Dad's questions come rapid fire and only go downhill from there.
What's your curfew?
1 a.m.
What time do you usually get home?
Around 2, Charlie admits.
Sometimes later, like last night. I'd like to apologize to you, sir, for getting Katie home so late. We lost track of time. Don't do it again, my dad tells him.
Now, why aren't you going to college?
Ugh. I'm sure Charlie didn't want me discussing with my father how I think he should use the money to fund his education instead of tooling around the country in a new truck. The little nest egg he's accumulated would probably cover classes at the community college, and then some. After that, he could transfer to UW and still afford it with an in-state tuition, and maybe some loans and grants. I may have done a little research on this in preparation for subtly suggesting it to Charlie.
I got hurt and lost my swimming scholarship, Charlie tells him.
I wonder if he's looking my dad straight in the eyes, or staring at his feet like he does when he's sad and or uncomfortable.
How many times a week do you shave?
Like 4? I can hear the confusion in Charlie's voice. He's definitely thinking, why does it matter?
I don't believe you, my dad tells him.
I'm dying. What is this? The Inquisition? Who cares how many times a week he shaves?
Who's your team?
The Seahawks, Charlie answers. This has to win my dad over. But my dad persists.
Why?
Charlie gets bonus points here.
Because they're great, and also because one time I met Richard Sherman at this burger place, and he ate some of my fries.
There's silence for a good minute. I'm sure Charlie is squirming in his seat. I know I am. I'm desperate to go save him. I keep staring at my phone, waiting for that text to pop up telling me I can go join them. Finally, my dad cracks.
That's awesome. That's important.
I know he's grinning. I'm so happy. Until a second later when he almost outs me.
Charlie, I know she seems strong, but she's fragile.
I'm not waiting for any text. I go bounding down the stairs, yelling a greeting that's really meant to interrupt the bomb dropping in progress.
Hey, what are you guys talking about?
Charlie gets up from the couch to give me a hug.
Nothing, just getting to know each other, my dad says.
Wow, Charlie says. He's staring at me, like he can't believe I exist. It's funny, because it's not like I'm dressed up or anything. I'm wearing jeans and a t-shirt, and weathered white Vans. But I did do my hair and makeup just like Morgan showed me, so maybe that's it. I reward him with a huge smile, grab my guitar case from where it's sitting in the corner. Charlie told me to bring it. I don't know why, but he sounded so excited I couldn't say no. And give my dad a little hug.
Well,
Dad says.
Be safe, okay?
I nod. Love you as much as possible. Charlie reaches out his hand. They shake.
Thanks for letting me take her out, Mr. Price, he says. I'll take good care of her.
We're about to walk out the door when my dad calls after us.
Wait! Let me take your photo.
I whirl around embarrassed.
Dad?
But Charlie seems perfectly happy to oblige my father's mortifying whims. He puts his arms around me from behind.
What do you think? Prom pose?
I laugh. My dad raises the camera to his eye.
Ready?
I look up at Charlie, and he looks down at me. We're grinning at each other. No phony smiles for us. The flash goes off, and we're on our way. Chapter 16. The train station? I say as Charlie pulls into a space in the parking lot. I'm trying not to look disappointed. I don't know what I expected for our date.
You might know where we are, but do you know why we're here?
He asks, pulling me along by the hand. I shake my head. No, but I hope you're not trying to make me play on the platform tonight. Remember how awkward that got the first time around? Charlie laughs.
How could I forget the dead cat funeral you had to go plan? It is where we first met, though.
He has a point, and I start to feel the disappointment slip away. We stop short right in front of Fred's little window. There are two tickets waiting there for us.
I believe these are yours,
Fred says, grinning at me. I look from Charlie to Fred, and then back to Charlie again. Where are we going? And why do I have my guitar? Charlie shrugs and smiles. I try Fred. He gives me an even more exaggerated shrug.
I know nothing, Fred tells me.
Fred. I try to implore him to spill it with the most innocent and sweetest look I can muster.
Don't even try it,
he tells me, pretending to lock his lips and throw away the key.
I'm a steel trap.
The train is approaching, taking us on an adventure to who knows where. I'm so excited. The doors open and the conductor gives me a huge smile. We've exchanged hellos before when I was playing here, but he certainly never had me as a passenger.
All aboard,
he calls out. Charlie and I climb the stairs and head into a car. It's basically deserted. Just us, dim lighting, and the rumble of the tracks underneath the wheels.
Your seat, mademoiselle?
Charlie says, gesturing to an empty row. I put my guitar down in the aisle and slide in. Charlie sits across from me. He starts setting up paper plates, napkins, and plastic silverware on the table between us.
I slaved all day on this, he says,
reaching into his backpack and pulling out a big bag from my favorite Chinese food place. I shake my head in disbelief when I realize all the trouble he went through to make tonight perfect for me. He's included all my favorites, lo mein, orange chicken, fried rice.
Did you just pull Chinese food out of your backpack?
I laugh.
Do you always travel with hot food?
This is a romantic picnic,
Charlie exclaims, trying to keep a serious look on his face, and totally not succeeding.
You can't ride a train without Chinese food out of a backpack.
I don't know, that could be true. I've never been on a train before,
I say.
Neither have I,
Charlie tells me.
Really? I thought I was the only person on Earth who hasn't.
I love that it's the first time for both of us. We clink our chopsticks and dig in.
You know what I've been thinking about?
He says when we're almost done eating.
How insane it is that you've lived right here since you were little, and I've never seen you riding your bike or, like, out with a lemonade stand. I would have bought your lemonade.
My heart skips a beat. The last thing I want to discuss right now is why we never met until a few weeks ago. I just want to enjoy the dinner, the ride, the date. Keep things light while we still can. I promise myself that I'll tell him before the night is over. When he drops me off tonight, before he gets out to walk me to the door, like I know he will, I'll come right out and say it. I'll be factual and to the point. No drama. I hope this doesn't change anything between us, I'll say. Easy peasy, just like that. When I imagine it this way, I can't imagine Charlie like screaming and running away, or rejecting me or never talking to me again. I really don't think my worst fears will come true. He's too good of a person to freak out over some faulty DNA. And he'll understand why I didn't tell him. I know he will. For now, though, I tell him, I don't like lemonade. As if that covers it. He presses his lips together and gives me a look.
You do know I know the truth, right?
I'm about to apologize for not telling him myself when he leans forward and looks left, then right, then directly at me again.
You're an international spy. You were always off on missions in exotic locations while I was sitting in the cafeteria bored out of my mind. I'm sure Katie Price isn't even your real name, he whispers.
I'm relieved that he was only kidding around, but I feel like it's one close call after another. Maybe my news can't wait until the end of the night. Might as well rip this band-aid off now, as quickly as possible, and just deal with whatever happens as a result. Reality is reality. I can't change what it is. That's very close. The real truth is... But I start rethinking how he'll take the news now that I'm about to be faced with it, and all my confidence that he'll be chill and cool and that nothing will change is gone. I decide he'll probably pretend it doesn't matter and profess that my condition won't come between us, but then we'll somehow start seeing less of each other. He'll suddenly become busy at night, and the best thing that's ever happened to me will be over. I lean my elbows on the table and decide to offer up half the story. Test the waters. No exotic locations, because you're my mission. I was under strict orders not to be seen, but I've been watching you for years from the safety of my own room. A beat. Charlie blinks. Then he grins at me.
See? I was close. Sorry if I blew your cover.
He gathers up the now empty boxes of Chinese food and goes to throw them out. When he comes back, he slides into the seat next to me and puts his arm over my shoulders. We watch the stars go by as the train chugs along.
You were so young. When your mom died, I mean,
he says softly.
Yeah. I often wonder about what happened to my mom after the car hit her. What did she think about? Was there a white light? Did her grandparents escort her to heaven? Will she get me when it's my turn? Or will it just be blackness? A big void? A curtain coming down and that's it? Like I never existed at all? For some reason, I always get stuck on that last thought. It's like my biggest fear, even though I can't explain why. I have to make a mark on this world before I'm forced to leave it. I have to make my time here matter somehow.
That must have been awful, Charlie says, interrupting my dark and desperate thoughts. Do you remember much about that time?
I think back for a moment.
Dad and I dealt with Mom being gone in much the same way we're dealing with the current situation. We slap a smile on our faces and power through, usually pretending the problem doesn't exist at all. Like if we ignore it long enough, maybe it'll just go away. Honestly, all I remember from that time is my dad. Watching him pretend to be okay so I'd be okay. And I'm pretending to be okay so he'll be okay, I tell Charlie. But somehow, you know, I guess we actually did make each other okay. We learned how to miss her together without being swallowed by the grief. Charlie nods. Yeah, you and your dad seem like you're really close. I shrug, staring out the window at Cassiopeia. According to Greek mythology, she's chained to a throne, forever stuck there as punishment for her boastfulness and vanity. I wonder sometimes if I did something to deserve XP. Something terrible that requires me to do penance in my house, in my room all day, every day until the sun sets. Yeah, I wish he knew me a little less well, though, I say. This isn't an entirely true statement. I know I'm lucky my dad loves and understands me. I just wish I had an opportunity to be loved and understood that same way by more people. People my own age, like at college. I want to be heading off in the fall too, instead of watching everyone else's lives expand while mine continues to contract. I'm terminally frustrated by my situation, especially by the recent realization that having XP basically means neither of the people closest to me will ever consider me adult in the same way they would if I was disease-free. They'll always feel the need to watch over me and baby me. Ready for dessert? Charlie asks. I nod.
Okay, then. Hold out your hands and close your eyes, he commands.
Charlie pours a pile of something into my cupped palm.
You can open up now.
I stare down at my hand. In it is a pile of Skittles, like the ones he kept trying to return to me the first night we met. I smile up at Charlie.
I got moves for days, he says. Hey, we're almost here.
I look out the window and see the Seattle skyline coming into view. I don't know where I thought we were going, but this is even cooler than I ever could have imagined.
Seattle? Cool!
The train comes to a stop and we get off. Neither of us really knows where we're going, and I'm pretty sure Charlie's agenda was just, let's hit Seattle and figure it out when we get there. We find ourselves wandering along the waterfront. Everything about being here is new and exciting, and it's honestly enough for me to just be looking at the glittery span of parks and piers that seems to go on forever. I gape at all the sidewalk cafes dotting streets that wind around in a seemingly endless maze. Despite its being after what I would assume is most kids' bedtimes, there are a lot of them still out eating with their parents. Guys with tight pants and hipster facial hair peck away at their laptops in coffee shop windows. Couples out on dates toast with glasses of champagne. But what really blows my mind is how many people are outperforming in the streets. Back in Purdue, I was always the only one. Here in Seattle, it seems like everyone has a talent. On one street corner, a magician rips a $100 bill into a million little pieces, and then poof, it's back together again. In the park, a pack of shirtless guys are doing the coolest breakdance moves I've ever seen, twisting themselves into pretzels, spinning on their heads, doing endless backflips over one another. There are these people dressed as statues who don't move an inch no matter what you do or say. I know because Charlie and I tried to get the guy dressed up as a silver-toned Michael Jackson to laugh, and he didn't even crack a smile. so we took a picture with him instead and left a few dollars as a thank you tip. And then there are the singers. So many singers with such beautiful voices. I'd have a heap of competition if I lived here, so I guess I should be glad I don't. Too bad my mind keeps chanting, "Let's move here, take out your guitar and join in, add harmonies and some finger picking." I feel like I've found an instant community, people to collaborate with and harmonize with and talk music and songwriting with until the break of dawn. It's all just waiting here for me. Charlie and I stop to admire the Olympic sculptures in Pioneer Square. Watch the fishermen hauling buckets of huge skate, perch, and salmon at Pike Place Market. We slide into an old-timey photo booth tucked into a corner and get cozy inside. The machine flashes 4 times. We smile, make goofy faces, hold up bunny ears behind each other's head, and throw our arms around each other and kiss. When the strip finally comes out of the machine, a few long minutes later, it's well worth the wait. I grab it and claim it as my own. "I'm going to treasure this forever," I tell Charlie. "I'm not kidding." He takes my hand and leads me down another busy road and through a deserted alley. We stop in front of a rickety building with an old-fashioned marquee above the door. There are no letters on it. No announcement of a movie or show or whatever. I don't get it. Charlie looks at me with a huge grin on his face. "What is this place?" "Your surprise," he tells me. Charlie hands 2 tickets and a bunch of cash to the bouncer. Even though the sign on the door clearly states anyone entering needs to be 21, the big burly guy doesn't bother asking us for IDs, which is a good thing because my real one says I'm 18. And I left it on the kitchen counter at home anyhow. "I thought Seattle was my surprise." He shakes his head and grins harder as we walk inside. Charlie hands my guitar case and jacket to the girl at the coat check. Another bouncer opens a door to let us into another room. Inside, music pounds. Lights explode. The place is packed from the makeshift stage, where one of my most favorite indie bands in the entire world is already playing, to the back of what appears to be a former warehouse space. A sweaty, happy crowd throbs to the beat. "It's a secret show!" Charlie yells into my ear. "I found out on Snap yesterday and grabbed tickets for us. I know you said you love this band."
"I do! Your first live show! Oh my God, it's so cool!"
Though the huge, drafty room is nondescript, the people and vibe are anything but. I've never seen so many colors of hair, so many tattoos, so many piercings in so many places IRL. It's like the pages of the music magazines I pore over in my room suddenly came to life. I found my people, my tribe of fellow creatives. Who knew they were so close all along? I whirl around, stunned that things like this actually happen in the world. There's so much I've been missing locked away in my room, in my little town, in my little existence. There is so much more out here for me, and it's so much more vibrant and exciting than the elaborate recreations of real life my dad so lovingly built for me when I was growing up, like the savanna in the basement and the beach he set up in the attic, complete with a hot tub, pool toys, and life-size photos of seagulls and dolphins and sharks and whales. I make a vow to myself, here and now. I'm going to grab every last little bit of everything this world has to offer. I will not be a prisoner of my disease a day longer. I realize that not only do I need to have a talk with Charlie, but that a long one with my father is way overdue, too. I know now that I can do way more things than I thought possible before tonight. Maybe even a real non-online college. Somehow. Where there's a will, there's a way. And I have a will of steel. While I'm thinking big thoughts and taking in the sights and sounds of this amazing place, Charlie weaves his way through the crowd, with me hanging on to his hand and trailing behind. He writhes through people like a sneaky serpent, finding little pockets of space we can fill undetected. Before long, we're right in front of the stage. Bonus points because no one even got mad at us for budging basically an entire concert's worth of people to get there. I turn to Charlie, beaming. He grabs my hips and we start dancing a way cooler version of the middle school grind. There is so much action going on, so much to watch, but all I see now is Charlie. No one and nothing else in the world matters at the moment. The band kicks into a real rocker, and the whole place starts jumping, one pulse uniting the diverse crowd. Charlie and I start jumping around like maniacs, too. I'm lost in the electricity of the music and the energy of this place. I've never felt so alive before, and it hits me that I might never get to experience anything like this again. I try to commit every last detail to memory, every last second. Long before I want it to, the music ends. We grab my coat and guitar and head back out to the piers. I'm still so buzzed from the show. It feels like I'm walking on water instead of sidewalk. "That was amazing!" I yell, probably a little too loudly. It's hard to tell what level my volume knob is at right now. My ears are still ringing from the concert.
"I know," Charlie says, grinning widely.
I throw my head back and whoop even louder. "Live music is the best!" Charlie laughs.
"I know!"
he yells back at me. I stop and take his hand. How can I express how he's changed everything for me? From the fact that I never believed a guy could like me because of my disease, to what I now believe my future could hold for me. I fumble around in my mind, trying to find the right words. Finally, I settle for a simple, "Thank you." Charlie gives me this adorable, curious puppy look, all floppy hair and playful eyes. It's like he knows what I'm thinking, even though he can't possibly. "You're welcome," he says. "Now for your turn." He gently places my guitar case on the ground and unlocks those finicky latches. Then he positions it perfectly to catch coins and hands me my guitar. I step back, holding up my hands in front of me.
"What? No, no way!"
"You owe me a song," Charlie tells me. I'm shaking my head. "I can't do that here. This isn't tiny Purdue, Washington. This is big city Seattle. I'm not prepared to debut one of my songs here. Not tonight. Not yet."
"Yes, you can," Charlie encourages me. "Live shows are the best. You said so yourself."
"Are you hungry?" I say, patting my stomach. "I'm hungry. And you're always hungry. And remember all those awesome cafes we saw back there?"
"Katie," Charlie says.
He sounds so serious, so sincere. I stop talking.
"We can either be in a new city under the stars, and you don't play me a song, or we can keep making this the best night of our lives."
He shrugs. He's so freaking cute. I feel my resolve melting. What he's given me is so much more than a 3-minute song. Singing one for him hardly makes a dent in what I owe him after tonight.
It's up to you, he tells me. Don't worry about anything else. This isn't about what I or anyone else wants. It's about what you want right now.
What I want to do is make this incredible guy happy. So I give in. I reach for my guitar and sling the strap over my shoulder. Charlie's entire face lights up. I give the strings a few good strums. When I look up from my guitar, Charlie's got his phone pointed right at me. He's ready to record this moment so it's captured forever. I get instantly self-conscious and my nerves kick in. Charlie, don't... He smirks and gestures to the non-existent crowd behind him. It's basically one weird hairy dude who stopped to tie his shoe.
We're waiting.
I see that he's right. There's nothing to lose here. Not even my dignity. It's just Charlie and me. There's nothing we can't do together. So I start strumming some chords, softly at first. I'm still feeling a little unsure of myself. But then it's like muscle memory takes over, and I forget that Charlie's recording me. I'm imagining what it would have been like to be on stage tonight, instead of in the crowd staring up in awe at the band. The nervous embarrassment exits my body, and in its place comes a supreme confidence in my abilities. I close my eyes and sing my latest creation, the one I played for Morgan the other night. Once she finally got over telling me about Garver and paid attention, she really liked it and thought it was the best one yet. I hope she's not mad at me anymore. I really need to tell her I'm sorry when I get home. I sing my heart out for Charlie, for Morgan, for my dad, but most of all, for me. When I open my eyes again, I see Charlie grinning from behind his phone. He's like my good luck charm, the only thing I'll ever need to succeed. I strum the last chord and realize Charlie's not the only person who liked my song. There's a whole crowd of people I didn't even realize were there, clapping and cheering wildly for me. And while my fans nowhere near amount to the people in the warehouse at the secret pop-up concert tonight, I get a good taste of what it's like to have my music appreciated by more than just my dad, Fred, and Morgan. I like it. I love it. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm going to crave a lot more of this in the future. Charlie throws his arm around a guy who is still clapping after almost everyone else has stopped.
Yeah! Come on, give it up for Katie! Woo!
He shakes the guy's shoulders like their team has just won the World Series. The guy gives Charlie a weird look, drops a few bucks into my guitar case, and walks off. Charlie smiles at me, and I can't stop smiling back. Chapter 17. The train ride back is uneventful, but fully awesome. Which is to say, we make out the entire time. No one else is in the car, no one is watching us, and we take full advantage of our solitude. When we get back to Purdue, which seems even tinier now that I've experienced Seattle, I'm just not ready for the night to end. I text my dad like I promised. Back in Purdue, home soon. Good night, he texts back. The absolute best.
Stay out as long as you want, Peanut. It's true. You're not a child anymore. I trust you to stay safe and take care of yourself. Charlie is a lucky guy.
Thanks, I text back, happy tears filling my eyes. You have no idea how much that means to me. We get in Charlie's truck and start to drive. I put my phone on Do Not Disturb and sign out of Find My iPhone, asserting my newfound independence and reveling in my dad's hard-earned trust. Tonight helped me see exactly what I want out of life. My independence. To make my own decisions, my own mistakes, my own way in this big, awesome world. I got this. Charlie and I drive to the beach. We park, then walk slowly down the shoreline. We're in no hurry to get anywhere. "You were incredible tonight," he tells me. I make a face like, "Come on now." He's basically starting to rival my dad as my number one fan. It's very sweet, but also kind of mortifying.
"Seriously," he continues, undeterred. "I probably would have said you were good no matter what, but you're really good. You have to do something with your songs."
I've been thinking the same thing all night. A great plan is beginning to form in my head, and it includes my moving to a city, going to college, whether it's only for night classes or researching all the tricks other people with XP use to live a semi-normal daytime life, and being a regular, normal student like everyone else. Playing every street corner and open mic night I can find, hoping to be discovered, but if not, simply taking every opportunity to feel as incredible as I did when I was performing an hour ago. Music is in my DNA, along with the markers for XP, and I want to share my songs with the world. After tonight, I'm pretty sure that's what I was put on this earth to do. That it's my mission in life. That's how I'll prove I was here even after I'm gone. And the best part of the future I'm imagining is this. Charlie is in it. I hope he'll be swimming at Berkeley. Is it so crazy to think I could go to school there too? I've got the grades and the test scores, and they've got the incredible academic programs and performing arts opportunities. I'm sure something could be worked out to accommodate my special needs. It's the perfect plan. I stop walking. "Are you ready?"
"For what?"
he asks. "To go swimming." Charlie blinks, surprised.
"What? No, I don't swim anymore."
"Yes, you do," I tell him. "You just haven't swum in a while. And I've never been in this water before, so you're gonna take me."
Charlie shakes his head. "Seriously, I don't want to."
I stick my hands on my hips. He's not getting off this easy. He can't ruin our perfect future together by not cooperating. "I didn't want to sing. You made me."
"That was different," he says, staring down at the sand.
"No, it was not." I stomp my foot for emphasis. Charlie laughs.
"Easy there, kiddo. Do you have any idea how cold that water is?"
I stare out into the dark ocean, then back at Charlie. I actually have zero clue, other than the hint I've just been given. But it's too late to back down now. Too much rides on what happens next. "Charlie, we can either have come all the way to the beach under the stars and we don't go swimming, or we can jump into this water and keep having the best night of our lives. What do you want to do right now?"
"Sure, I stole his own speech and turned it around on him. Whatever it takes. As they say, all's fair in love and war."
Charlie gives me a smirk, like he thinks he's won this particular battle.
"I don't have a bathing suit."
I smirk right back at him.
"Neither do I."
I pull my t-shirt over my head, and then I'm standing in front of him, in my bra and jeans. His eyes go wide, but he doesn't move. He's calling my bluff. I toss my sneakers into the sand and shimmy out of my pants. It's too late to back out now. I'll keep peeling off layers until he agrees.
"Are you coming?" I ask, running toward the water in my underwear.
I turn around as the first wave laps my toes. They basically go numb. I'm not sure how I'm going to make myself dive all the way in. All I know is that it's going to happen. Charlie already has his shirt off and he's struggling to get out of his shorts. I laugh at his sudden enthusiasm. I turn back toward the water, take a deep breath, and go charging in.
Oh my God, it's freezing!
I whoop. Charlie throws his head back.
I know!
He yells and runs in after me. Our happiness echoes off the ocean. I feel like it knows we're meant to be together.
Do you like to swim?
Charlie asks me.
I shrug. I guess. I mean, I don't have all that much experience.
His mouth falls open like he can't believe I'm so deprived.
We have to change that. When are we ever going to be in another situation where I genuinely have moves? Here, let me show you some.
My heart quickens in the darkness.
You're going to show me your moves?
Yep, he says, grabbing me and basically laying me down in the water. And then he's holding me there, his touch gentle but firm. I can't believe I never knew how great it is to feel so close to someone, both physically and mentally. Sometimes, when Charlie and I are lying next to each other kissing, it's like I want to melt right into him. Before I met Charlie, I had given up on ever falling in love in real life, and with that, ever having sex with anyone. It hasn't happened yet, but the truth is, I wouldn't say no if the opportunity presented itself someday in the not-so-distant future.
Okay, this one's called freestyle, he says, showing me how to reach out and draw my arm back to move forward. It's like the most basic stroke of them all.
I give it a go, but end up flailing around instead of gliding through the water like Charlie did.
Like this? I ask him.
He laughs.
That's what we call the doggy paddle.
Fine then, I say. Show me another one. He launches into another demonstration.
Okay, for this one you push your palms backward along your hips at the end of the pull. That's the butterfly.